On Sunday, April 19th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents pianist, composer, and MacArthur Foundation recipient, Vijay Iyer. Join us as we discuss what's new, his musical influences, his latest release, Break Stuff, and his upcoming dates at the Jazz Standard. That's Sunday, April 19th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening is Grammy-nominated composer, pianist, and educator, Vijay Iyer. It's been a while since he's visited us, and so this is a long overdue return. Vijay's trio is going to be at the Jazz Standard. We'll talk more about that later. Stay tuned. We're going to be offering a ticket giveaway for that event. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. She'll Get My Bowl coming up now.
Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Vijay Iyer.
Vijay Iyer, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
I'm so happy to be here.
I really appreciate your return visit. And first off, you've been doing so many things since we spoke last. And one of them being, you're a MacArthur Foundation recipient.
Oh.
And among other things.
I mean,
but
has it been that long? That's what the O was about since I was on your show?
It has been that long. To tell you the truth, the last time you were on, you had just released the solo.
Oh, yeah. That's about 4 years ago.
Yeah. You do so much. So now that we're talking, you're a MacArthur Foundation recipient, and you're teaching at Harvard.
All these things are true.
So what has that done for your life?
Oh, it's certainly kicked things into a different gear. It's funny because the award, the fellowship is supposed to bring about freedom and ease. And then suddenly I had all these new obligations.
Wow.
Or just responsibilities, I think is a better way to put it.
Right.
So I guess it's been an intense kind of balancing act, basically trying to stay the artist that I have tried to be and bring that mentality and that perspective to an academic institution like that one, and just try to keep being myself, sick of it all. It's been really nice. I mean, it's some of the most brilliant people in the world are there, and some really important research is going on there, and students are pretty incredible, and but it's an inspiring place. It's like a mini city. There's so many things going on there on any given day. You know, I find myself, when I have a moment there, like I was actually there over this weekend, because I was also playing there with my group at the Regatta Bar in Boston.
With the trio?
So, yes. So then I had a little bit of extra time, and so I thought I'd go to some talks and performances and public lectures and visit some classes and just basically kind of be a student.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice, you know, because the place has a lot to offer.
So what is it that you're teaching?
You know, well, I'm trying to get the young musicians there to think more broadly about what they do and listen to the world and get more of a sense of history and build community. And then I'm also, you know, I interact with scholars of music here too, the PhD students in music theory and musicology and so forth, and I try to get them to listen differently and to read broadly and look outside the discipline, so maybe think more cross-disciplinarily, I guess.
Yeah.
And to basically try to think about what the future of these different fields might look like. I did a graduate seminar last semester called Theorizing Improvisation. You saw the syllabus, didn't you? I feel like you were somebody who commented on it.
No, I didn't,
no? Okay.
Actually. No.
All right. Oh, okay.
What you have
it
going
was,
on?
Well, just because I had posted it on Facebook. Which then launched this quite bizarre response. I don't know.
What did you have going on that elicited that response?
Oh, well, it's a lot of reading. And it's very interdisciplinary. And, you know, it's probably like when people think of this area of music, certain people will get hostile or angry when it seems like there's any kind of rigor or study or pursuit of knowledge going on. They like to think that there's no thought involved in this music.
The haters like to think there's no thought.
Yeah, especially the haters.
Yes.
But it's also, there's something kind of very possessive about it. That's not jazz or something like that, you know.
It's like the gatekeepers, as we like to call them.
I guess so, but I'm not sure what gates they're keeping. You know, these are
when we use the phrase gatekeeping, it's generally it's sort of there are people who have their understanding of what the music is, and anyone who tries to do anything differently, they will shut you out. You can't go there. You can't do that there. You can't express that there. It's almost as though they would like you to exist in a vacuum. So no one would know that you're doing your thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, you know, they end up just sort of being a blip on the horizon. And, you know, but I was more focused on what we were able to build and theorize, you know, of what we were able to arrive at? What sort of understandings or new knowledge we're able to produce or arrive at?
Well, my partner Hank had mentioned how you're teaching, that, as you mentioned, music theory instead of performance.
I'm doing a lot of different things. I mean, okay. It's not really music theory.
Uh-huh.
First of all, that course wasn't. I think music theory is too narrow a frame for what it was, because it was actually a very interdisciplinary conversation about improvisation. But it was reading, you know, and writing and talking. It wasn't playing. It wasn't even analyzing music.
Well, that must have blown their mind that they weren't playing.
One course. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It blew my mind. I mean, because it was like I dragged myself through all those readings too. But no, I mean, that's just one thing. You know, I do a lot of work with musicians there every day. And the musicians who are tend to be undergraduates, actually, and most of them are not music majors. But that's partly because they came to Harvard to study something else, but music is still very much a big part of their lives, and some of them are going to be professional musicians or music makers of some kind, composers and improvisers and performers. So yeah, I mean, I've run another course, which I didn't post the syllabus for, but it's basically kind of part seminar and part masterclass. So it's about making music together, but also I ask them to read and write and think and talk about what they're doing and what has come before, ground themselves in a certain awareness of the history. So, you know, why this music exists in the first place. A lot of them who come to me as players haven't studied things like that. They haven't read blues people, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or they haven't thought about where this music came from or where any music comes from. Or what their relationship to that community might be or what their relationship to that history might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to get them thinking in those terms as well as listening to each other and building together. It's sort of like community organizing.
I was thinking that very same term.
Because it's particularly because it's not really the initial orientation of a typical Harvard student. They're usually in it for themselves. They're in it to win. They're to succeed.
That's
how they got in the first place.
Right.
So I'm asking them to sort of take a step back from that and think more about collaboration and community service and honesty.
Wow. That must really throw them for a loop after what they were, you know, being prepared to encounter once they got there.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the thing is that, you know, all of that that is said, you know, like, you know, basically a concept of empathy. I mean, that's part of music.
Right.
That's basically what I'm trying to assert to them, and you know, through what I do as an artist and what I show them as just in terms of the examples I set forth for them to reach their own conclusions, I try to demonstrate that music and empathy are the same thing.
Right.
So when you actually bring people to that kind of perspective, then it actually shifts the way they choose to make it. Or even the purpose.
How long will you be there?
Until I leave.
Okay.
No, I mean, I was hired with tenure, so
I'm
there.
Oh, my. Wow. Yeah. So you're commuting.
Yeah, I've been back and forth between Harlem and Cambridge. Yeah.
Wow.
Every week I go up there and come back, and often I go somewhere else after that. Like, I've been here for about 20 hours.
Oh, wow.
And in the morning, I'm going to Columbus, Ohio.
Oh.
And then to Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, and then to D.C., and so on. So.
Oh, my.
And then actually, of course, to New York.
Yes, for the Jazz Standard.
The Jazz Standard, April 22nd to 25th.
Yay.
The trio. I'm very excited to set up shop over there for 5 nights, 12 sets.
Oh. Wow. I suspect you'll be playing a lot from your latest release, Break Stuff.
Yeah, but we're also always reaching back into the archives.
Sure.
And also, we're always adding new material to the repertoire. So we try to keep it always in motion. I'm not interested in routines,
right,
or just sort of putting on a show. I mean, I want to keep challenging ourselves, and discovering, rebuilding.
Well, speaking of break stuff, I noticed my favorite song is now on a recording, is on Break Stuff, Hood.
Hey. That's your favorite song? That's great.
heard it. I heard the trio play it at La Poisson Rouge.
Oh, yeah. We've been doing it for a while now.
Yeah.
And but it's been evolving. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. that's also one we try to somehow make it new every time or make something else happen every time inside of it.
I so enjoy that.
Thank you.
And you said that it's dedicated to a DJ?
Yes. The electronic musician Robert Hood is one of the pioneers of Detroit techno. And he, especially his early music, it had a kind of patterning in it that really, it'd be basically the numerical patterns just sort of progressing through each other and creating these weird, almost like moiré effects, you know?
Wow.
With rhythm.
Uh-huh.
But it would also be in the context of dance music, so it wasn't just this cerebral affair, like it was actually, it made you move, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was interested in, and still is, in somehow making electronic music that has a soul, or that has what he called squeezing blood from a drum machine.
Oh, wow.
Like making it feel like this is alive, like this music is alive, and that it has some sort of embodied presence to it. So I was interested in that, you know, that maybe we can approach it from the opposite angle, you know, because we start from the standpoint of the flesh, like we're in, you know, we're trying to do something. So it's our bodies already, you know, there's already a blood and guts component to it.
Right.
But then like trying to organize it into these patterns that has its own trajectory, I guess, that emerges from that as we try to do it, as we try to make our bodies do these patterns in synchrony and in these like strange progressions across each other. Yeah, so it's an experience. I don't know. I don't even know what it is. I mean, at some level, it's larger than what any of us knows it is. It's just this behavior at this point. This thing we get into, it just is itself. When we do it, it ends up eclipsing everything else.
Wow.
You know.
Well, I know when I first heard it, it just grew and grew and like, oh my gosh, this is so great! And it was like, and it's still going! And I was like, yay!
That's great.
And after it was done, even though I wasn't literally standing and dancing and, you know, it felt like an aerobic workout.
Well, that's good.
Which was really nice. Now, that's not the only recording on Break Stuff. How did you come up with selecting the other tunes?
Well, we've always done with the trio, sort of maybe contrary to what people tend to write or think about us based on the albums anyway. You know, when we make these albums, we go into the studio and say, well, what do we know how to do right now? And here's a bunch of things we know how to do.
No.
Let's just try to record all of them. Maybe some of them will be good enough to put on a record. That's basically all we do. There's not any kind of agenda or, like I said, we're always adding to the repertoire.
Right.
We're always reaching into the archives. So the sound of the group evolves. And so all of that is to say that what we put on the album, which we recorded last June, is what we were able to put on the album at that moment.
Right.
Which
right.
had been kind of compiled from several different places. I mean, the title piece and a few associated pieces were all part of a suite that we created for a concert at the Museum of Modern Art in 2012.
Mm.
Then there's several pieces that we did with Teju Cole, the novelist, when we did the Open City project, which was a large ensemble project we did in Montclair State in fall of 2013. That was a large ensemble music, which then the trio kind of extracted material from and sort of reduced and adapted that way. So that's partly why there's a sort of spaciousness there, because we're kind of taking the backbone of other music and just sort of filling it up a different way. It's kind of like a dub version of some of these pieces. So then, you know, like those breaks, you know, they end up having their own resonance and their own energy.
Mm.
And then there's a few pieces that I sort of felt like I knew how to play. That I've been working on, you know, basically like, because I've been playing for 20 years or more. So I thought, okay, let me try recording it. But not going to get any better than where it is right now.
Which one is that?
There's a piece by Strayhorn called Blood Count, which I played solo.
Yes.
There's a monk tune called Work.
Yes.
And there's a Coltrane tune called Countdown.
Countdown, yeah.
So we did those three. The first two more or less straight. The third one straight for us, which is like still a little oblong or something, I don't know. Angular.
Which is really kind of interesting for a train tune. you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Straight.
Well, the thing is, it was already this kind of impossible piece. You know, when you wrote it, challenge himself and challenge everyone else, and countdown, I'm talking about.
Right.
you know, I've been basically shedding that tune for 20 years, and I wouldn't say that I killed it or something, but it's partly that I set it into a different rhythmic framework so that it would just move a different way. But I sort of use the same strategy that Coltrane used, which is that you start in duo with the drums, so mm-hmm. the harmonies kind of emerge from the melodies. Harmony becomes something the ear sort of observes in retrospect, almost, as the notes add together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that sound. It's very something kind of pure about just melody and drums.
So is Monk one of your... I don't think I've ever asked you this about your go-to composer. Is Train one of them? Is Monk another? Duke a third? Or?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to like step back and look at all these albums and think about whom I've covered,
mm-hmm.
right, there have been a couple of Monk tunes, because mm-hmm. on my solo album I did Epistrophe.
Right.
I lived in Duke Ellington, more than one Duke Ellington piece, because on the last trio album I did piece from his ballet for Alvin Ailey called
mm-hmm.
The River.
Mm-hmm.
And on my solo album I did Lorette Africaine.
Yes. Love that one.
On the last trio album I covered a Herbie Nichols tune.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago I covered a Bud Powell tune. Then there's Andrew Hill. There's Julius Hemphill. There's mm-hmm. Threadgill. Steve Coleman. I did one of his tunes on the solo album. So basically, it is sort of my personal pantheon. You really check it out. And then it starts getting into this other territory, like there's a Michael Jackson song, there's the Heat Wave cover, there's the Ronnie Foster cover, there's Stevie Wonder. But all of it is, to me, connected and resonant, inspiring to me. So that's kind of, basically I've been trying to tell you all. it's in the music.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's all basically abundantly there in the
yeah.
music. If you look for it, those are my touchstones, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you mentioned Heat Wave Tune, which George Benson sang as well, yeah, Star of a Story. Yeah. That has got to be the most complex drum pattern and just relationship between the three of you. Like, oh my goodness, what the heck? did you plural really have to work that out for a while before you committed it to recording?
Well, yeah, we took a couple days. That was when we did back in, I guess we recorded it in 2011 for a Chaturanga, which came out in 2012. And yeah, I mean, there was, in a way, it was kind of a natural extension of what we had been doing in terms of a certain rhythmic gait, you could say, that had a certain quality to it. We just tried to speed it up until the individual elements in it are basically too fast to be audible.
Yeah.
But instead, what you get is the shape of it, which has a certain asymmetry. So it means that the beat itself contains an asymmetry inside it, but it's still a beat that's, so you basically, it's still in 4/4, it's just that inside of each of those four is some profile. And so that's sort of what I was going for, because it has a certain feeling to it, especially that speed, where you just notice the profile of it, like the kind of lurch quality it has.
yes.
And that, to me, connected it to other music that we hear, like Dilla's beats or Flying Lotus's beats or even a lot of what's on Kendrick's new album.
Right.
Which is a certain kind of swagger in the step or something.
Right.
Like a certain kind of angularity in the bounce that's sort of like a wobble. what seems off balance but is balanced. Mm-hmm. But just feel it has a certain feeling that I like. It sort of sounds wrong and sort of sounds right.
Mm.
And I like that. I like that combination of that quality.
You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Shouldn't get my bowls the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. What you're listening to is a conversation with Vijay Iyer, the Grammy-nominated composer, pianist, and educator. What you're listening to right now is from the latest release, Break Stuff. This is the title track. Before that, we heard The Star of a Story from the Vijay Iyer Trio. Accelerando is the name of that release. This is an Act 2012 recording. Before that, we heard Star of a Story, George Benson's version from Give Me the Night, the 1990 Warner Brothers release with Herbie Hancock on Rhodes. Before that, we heard Countdown from Break Stuff. That's a John Coltrane composition. Before that, we heard Hood from Break Stuff. Before that, we heard Diptych from Break Stuff, another recording from Break Stuff. Break Stuff was released this year on ECM Records, and that's Vijay Iyer on piano, Stefan Crump on bass, and Marcus Gilmore on drums. That is the Vijay Iyer Trio. And we open the program with our theme, Nina Simone, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl. Coming up soon after Break Stuff is our segment On the Bandstand with associate producer Hank Williams. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar My Bowl, Vijay Iyer, Hank Williams, coming up now.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for April 19th. In this show segment, we feature aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. And this week's show features pianist Vijay Iyer. He leads a trio at the Jazz Standard from April 22nd to 26th. Details are at jazzstandard.com. And we also have a ticket giveaway for one pair of tickets that week. We'll give you the info at the end of the segment, so get your pens and pencils ready. But first, we have more music for you this week. Saxophonist Oliver Lake's visual art exhibit of his painted sticks is on view at the Algiers Center for Contemporary Art in downtown Newark, New Jersey until May 21st. Details are at algira.org. That's A-L-J-I-R-A.org. Trombonist and seashellist Steve Turay is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club with the Purchase Jazz Orchestra on April 20th. Pianist Barry Harris leads a trio at the Village Vanguard from April 21st to 26th. And pianist Onaje Allen Gums is at IS204 in Astoria, Queens. That's at 3641 28th Street in Astoria on April 24th. And there's a small suggested donation for admission. For details, call Jessica Acosta at 347-813-4452. That's 347-813-4452. And pianist Mark Carey is at the Side Door in Old Lyme, Connecticut on April 25th. Bassist William Parker and percussionist Adam Rudolph join trumpeter Wadada Leo Smith at the Stone on April 26th. And Parker, trombonist Dick Griffin, and multi-instrumentalist Charles Gale will all be at Clemente Soto Velez Center in Manhattan as part of Arts for Arts Earth Our World series. Griffin appears on the 29th with Joe McVie's trio, and Parker is on the 30th and May 1st, and Gale joins Parker on May 1st. Details for all those events are at artsforart.org. That's arts, A-R-T-S, for art.org. Saxophonist Marshall Allen is at Zinc Bar with Francisco Mora Catlett's Afro Horn on April 30th. Vocalist Nona Hendricks appears at Harlem Stage on April 30th and May 1st in Parallel Lives, Billie Holiday and Edith Piaf. Saxophonist Gary Bartz leads a quintet at the Jazz Standard on April 30th to May 3rd. And low brass specialist on two-band trombone, Joe Daly appears with Hazmat Modine at Iridium on the 27th and Terra Blues on May 2nd and 16th. WBAI is a media supporter of the Central Brooklyn Jazz Consortium's Jazz Festival, which runs through May 17th at various Brooklyn locations. You can get more info at their website, which is centralbrooklynjazzconsortium.org, and you can see the link on our website. So to win tickets to the Vijay Iyer Trio at Jazz Standard, go to our blog, which is blog.sugarinmybowl.org, and put your contact info into the sign-up form and we'll contact you. Tickets are for the 10 p.m. set any night from Wednesday the 22nd to Sunday the 26th. And I'll give you that address one more time. That's blog.sugar, S-U-G-A, with no R, inmybowl.org. And the sign-up form closes 9 a.m. Monday morning, so don't wait. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well. If you like what we do, please help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on WBAI on Sunday, May 3rd. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio and online at WBAI.org.
The role of media in a democratic society should be to empower people to make decisions.
WBAI.
speaking truth to power for over 50 years.
You have very few powerful media outlets that are actually doing the two things that I think are the most central aims of good journalism, which is to give voice to the voiceless and hold those in power accountable.
WBAI, your community alternative.
Well, you mentioned Kendrick Lamar, and I think of Kendrick Lamar mostly because of the content that he provides. How do you feel about Kendrick Lamar as a writer of content?
I think it's really pretty on point.
I mean,
there's a number of artists around now who are really tapped into the moment, expressing the concerns of today and not shying away from them or not trying to succeed by bypassing that. And that's been inspiring to see. It's, you know, the movement coming back into the music. So I think he's an exponent of that. You know, he's one of the exemplars.
He's also not afraid to express himself personally, to sort of turn his lyrics on himself. He expresses what he's actually experiencing as opposed to,
Right.
It's very personal.
Well, you get a lot of introspection.
Yeah.
And just a searing intensity.
Yeah.
Heathens! 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 Ugly on purpose. They murder to explain themselves. They're always naked and always dirty. In the shower and tuxedo. Don't ask. When their brains got large enough, they created hell. Jesus never been in Europe. Heathens! Heathens think fascism is civilization. Fascism, civilization. They imitate conversation by lying. Fascism is civilization. That they are superior to humans. And that humanity is metaphysical. X.
X. Everything we don't understand is explained in art. X. 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 The sun beats inside us. X, X, X. The spirit courses in and out of us. The spirit courses in and out of us. X, 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 X. A circling transblusency, pumping Detroit red inside, deep through us, like a sea. X, 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 X. And who calls us bitter? Who calls us bitter? Has bitten us. And from that wound pours Malcolm. Little by little. X, 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 X. And who calls us bitter has bitten us. And from that wound pours Malcolm. Little by little.
You mentioned this mood coming back to music and how that's a good thing, sort of expression of, I guess, politics and what is actually happening, the pulse of what is happening. And when I hear that, I think of Amiri Baraka. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he transitioned, but his work and his words and everything are still with us. And I know you worked with him.
Sure did.
And how are you adjusting to his physically not being here?
Yeah, it's still awkward. You know, he was so present and mm-hmm. so committed and so fearless and so vocal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you were on the same planet as him, you couldn't miss him. You know, mm-hmm. like he was always involved and also always nurturing. Yet he listened with compassion. And after he passed, in the book Digging, which is a compilation of his writings and
right.
music, his first review of my music back from the mid-90s, I think it was the album that came out in 95, which was a year or two later that he reviewed it. And I realized that he was actually one of the first and still one of the only critics. I mean, you know, he was wearing his critic hat
mm-hmm.
at that moment. But he was one of the only critics ever to talk about my feelings.
Mm.
Like the fact that I, as an artist, might have feelings and that the music might somehow reflect that, you know, and that he heard it and basically empathized, like he related to me as a person. And that always was one of his great gifts, that he could listen. He could really hear you. And he could hear who you were and where you're coming from and embrace it. And that, I don't know, I guess when I read that, I lost it. I couldn't contain my feelings because it was really, to realize that anew. And especially, you know, by now I've received, and if you add it all up, over 20 years, 20 albums, hundreds of concerts, I've received thousands of reviews, you know? And to realize that he's still basically like one of the only people ever to address my humanity in that way.
I take it that was a memorophilia?
Yes, it was. But, you know, and then getting to know the man and his spirit and getting to work with him for years and getting through things with him, like going through experience like that poetry festival where we did Somebody Blew America.
Oh.
That was the event that brought it all down.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I was on that gig, you know,
wow.
And things like that. Or, like, you know, we went to my first serious gig with him was we went to Cape Verde. So I played with him in Africa. And then getting to know that he was involved in the freedom struggle for Cape Verde and that Amilcar Cabral was a friend of his.
Mm.
Then coming to realize the, you know, then, you know, going to his house and seeing a picture of him and training together.
Yeah.
You know? And coming to realize the extent of his impact in the world. I mean, that funeral last year was one of the most incredible events I've ever witnessed. I mean, the coming together of so many communities in honor of this man who he touched all of them very deeply, you know.
I think one of the things that really stood out for me was the firemen coming out and playing bagpipes. And it actually, you know, I was one of the percussionists who was drumming, and as we sort of faded out, the bagpipes came in. Wow, amazing.
Yeah, that was really remarkable.
And then just seeing how civil the policemen were. It's like there was absolutely no harassment of any attendee.
Yeah, yeah.
He was definitely respected by many. I got to ask you this, though, with regard to wiring with 303. Mm-hmm. How was that for you working with those guys who have just been doing this for so long and so well?
Oh, it was wonderful, warm and welcoming. I mean, this is, you're talking about Reggie Workman, Andrew Cyrille, and Oliver Lake.
Yes.
You know, the giants of this music. I mean, they're generous and they're very patient. They're also very compassionate listeners. You know, they really hear you. So they really, to be invited to be a part of that. I mean, I remember seeing that group with Andrew Hill in the mid-90s, and that changed my life. You know, and I've seen them many times since then. Mm-hmm. Really admire. I remember seeing them with Jerry Allen about 5 years ago. It was when they did the Alice Coltrane music and tribute to her.
Oh, wow!
And as well as Mary Lou Williams. So it was just really fantastic and so exciting. And I'd come to know Reggie. Actually, I first met him playing with Amiri. Mm-hmm. He showed up on one of those gigs at one point. I remember we were playing upstairs at some kind of house event. It was a fundraiser for Rod, if I remember right.
Oh, okay.
So we were playing upstairs, and downstairs they're playing a Coltrane record that he was on.
Oh, wow.
You know, I said, "Is that John?" He said, "Of course." Yeah, I love Reggie. I've spent a good amount of time with him now. We brought him up to the dance workshop that I'm director of last summer. So we spent some good quality time in the mountains making music together and teaching.
Yeah, and how did... I actually noticed that's B-A-N-F.
Yeah, two
F's. Two F's, yes. Workshop. And I noticed pictures on Facebook of all these folks you brought up there. What was it? Tyshawn Sorey, the drummer, was one of them. Imani Azuri, the vocalist. All kinds of folks. What
Nicholas
is that?
Tate. Nicholas Tate.
Yes.
Yeah. It was wild. It was wild. Now, this year's going to be wild, too.
When does that usually happen, and how, and can anyone just go?
Well, there's an admissions process, which I'm currently behind schedule on.
Uh-oh.
And it happens in, I moved it this year to August, so it takes over 3 weeks of August. I became the director a couple of years ago. This will be my third year as director. Mm-hmm. And I just try to push the envelope and... So basically what I was saying before about my courses at Harvard, I mean, I try to bring that same sensibility. It's about community and it's about collaboration. And I guess I start from the standpoint that anybody can make music together. And so it's partly about exposing the narrower factions of this music to a broader palette of possibilities through seeing it enacted by the faculty. You know?
Nice.
So... Like last year, I mean, we had Reggie Workman, and we had Tyshawn, and Nicholas, and Matana. And
Matana Roberts.
Yes. Uh-huh. And Aruna Sairam, who's a Carnatic vocalist.
Uh-huh.
And a great young guitar player named Nir Felder. That was just 1 week.
Wow.
The week before that, we had Jeff Tane Watts, and Steve Lehman, and Rich Brown, an amazing bass player from Canada. This year we're going to have Zakir Hussain and Wadada Leo Smith and Sean and I think Matt Garrison is coming and Billy Hart is coming.
Oh wow!
Mark Turner, it's bananas. It's not even. I can't even talk about it. It's too crazy. So I guess the thing is, it's partly for us. You know, it's not just. It's for all of us together. It's for the students. It's for the faculty too. For us to come together and build, sit down, share meals, and make music and teach and learn.
And listen and build community.
Exactly.
Wow. Jerry Allen, you mentioned her earlier. And I remember seeing you play with Jerry Allen while she was on piano. You were on Rhodes.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah, at the Stone. Yeah, with Graham Haynes on cornet. And have you recorded on Rhodes?
Yeah. Well, I'm on a couple of Wadada's albums,
okay.
Playing Rhodes, and it figures into the projects I did with Mike Ladd.
Okay.
There's some Rhodes on Holding It Down, but Rhodes in What Language?
There is a
photo of me as a knight at 4 with Jonathan the Mormon. Then at 5 as General George Washington. At 6 I am a Union soldier surrounded by Frankenstein's wizards and Spider-Man. I am the serious boy saluting Halloween. Then I am 10. Look more like 12, my face a terrible grimace, gun barrel towards the lens, my version of a Gurkha, too close to Vietnam. Perhaps it was the last shot that convinced my mother, formerly an atheist, to become a Quaker. That from the age of 12, she and I would sit in square pews and wait for a voice. A difficult task in talkative Cambridge with slightly differing opinions on the U.S. and Honduras and sanctions on South Africa. Someone once actually said, I am sensing that God would not approve of invading Grenada. But there were times when everyone said nothing. Only our breathing, the creak of oak, voicing our way.
Between the carnival of phone cards, batteries, and trinkets, and a pastel cliff of Hallmark well wishes, I crunch other people's dreams, punching numbers into the black and blue lotto machine. My neighbors see.
How do you feel about playing Rhodes as opposed to playing acoustic piano?
It's fun. It's another animal in a way. I actually play it in my sextet a bit. It becomes part of the arsenal there.
Okay.
Which we have not yet recorded.
I was like, I know I didn't miss this sextet.
No, I hope to record that next year maybe.
Who's the part of the lineup there?
Well, it's my trio plus Graham Haynes and Steve Lehman and Mark Shim. So it's a bunch of bad dudes.
Nice. Yeah,
pretty special folks.
Is there anything in the works with you recording with Jerry Allen?
Oh, that sounds like a good idea.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. One time I was sitting with her and Craig Taborn, and she... we just wound up at, actually it was when she was still teaching at University of Michigan, and there was a double bill with my band and Rudresh Mahatapa's band, and Craig was at the time playing piano in Rudresh's band. So we had a moment backstage where we all got to sit around a table, and it was like, well, such a deep, like, I don't know. Well, Jerry is such an influence on both of us, Craig and me, and Craig is one of my, you know, to me, I have so much respect for him. And, so just sitting around with the table, these guys, and Jerry just casually said, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do for my next project. I just said, three pianos.
That's right.
So I'm hoping, I don't know what.
That would be so great. I can't imagine, and can't imagine, what the three of you would come up with, but the sounds, I'm sure, would be incredible.
Well, actually, Craig and I have done a lot of two piano stuff, and that's probably something we're going to record sometime soon.
Okay.
And also, I've done two piano stuff with Amina Claudine Myers.
Ah, okay.
Which I just unearthed recently. I mean, it was in the last decade. I mean, I love her. I love her music. I love playing, and I love playing with her, and it was really exciting. So, things I have in the vaults here, the digital vault.
Well, since you always have something going on, once again, let's repeat the Jazz Standard dates.
Yes, it's April 22nd to 25th. There are at least two sets a night, three sets on the Friday and Saturday.
So, this will be airing on the 19th, so the Wednesday... After Wednesday, people, you can start making your way to Jazz Standard to catch.
That's right. Wednesday through Sunday.
Yes.
Come many times because every set is different.
No doubt.
Yeah, it is. We strive to make them all unique.
Excellent. So is there anything else you want to share with the WBAI listening audience?
Just my gratitude and hopefully some actual music. It is a lot of talking about it.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for J.I.R. for spending time. We should get my bowl again.
And my pleasure.
I always wish I could spend more time talking to you.
Well, we'll have to do it between sets.
There you go.
All right.
All right. Peace.
Thank you. Take care.
you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowls, the name of this program. Just finished having a discussion with pianist, composer, and educator Vijay Iyer. And the Vijay Iyer Trio will be at the Jazz Standard this week, starting Wednesday, from Wednesday to Sunday, from April 22nd through the 26th. And what you're listening to right now is Aftermath from Tragicomic, a 2008 Sunnyside Records release. That's with Jay Iyer on piano, Rudresh Mahanthappa on alto saxophone, Stefan Crump on bass, and Marcus Gilmore on drums. So that's the trio, plus one. And before that, we heard three Lotto stories featuring Latasha Diggs, Latasha and Nevada Diggs, and that's from Vijay Iyer and Mike Ladd, In What Language, the 2003 Pi Records release. Before that, we heard another Vijay Iyer, Mike Ladd recording, Holding It Down, the Veterans Dream Project, the 2013 Pi Records release. The name of the recording is Costume. Before that, we heard Sweet for Trayvon and Thousands More. It's Trio 3 and Vijay Iyer from Wiring, the 2014 Intact Records release. Oliver Lake on alto sax, Vijay Iyer on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Andrew Cyril on drums. Before that, we heard Relativist Waltz, and that's Vijay Iyer's debut release as a leader from Memorophilia, which was reviewed by Amiri Baraka, a 1998 Red Giant Records release. Vijay Iyer on piano, Steve Coleman on alto sax, Jeff Brock on bass, and Brad Hargraves on drums. Before that, we heard Heathens, Amiri Baraka and Amina Baraka's The Shawnee Project. That's a 2004 Brown Sound International release. And I'm going to mention these now because we're just going to enjoy some recordings that Vijay Iyer has been on. And so after this recording, Aftermath, we're going to hear Sometimes from Faye Victor, music by her husband Joaquim, and lyrics by Faye. That's from Darker Than Blue, 2001 Timeless Records release. Faye Victor on vocals, Vijay Iyer on piano, Anton Goosmith on guitar, John Herbert on bass, and Mark Mummas on tenor sax, Steve Haas on drums. And we're going to close out the program with another track from Break Stuff, Starlings, the Vijay Iyer Trio. Stay tuned, La Nueva Alternativa is coming up next. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowl continues.
Together, and I'm tired. tired thinking about being stressed out.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.